Well, good afternoon, everybody. It's Eddie. Got Miss Zarina with us. Hey, hey.
Hey.
Got Mr. Mangan with us.
Good afternoon, everybody.
Mr. Mangan's going to jump in here and answer some technical questions, and then we're going to let him go back and manage a portfolio.
Where's Mangan's face?
Mangan's face? Why? I know, it's beautiful, Zarina. Hold on a minute.
There he is.
Black. Sorry.
Boom.
They blacked me out.
Got Matt with us, running the boards today.
Anyway.
And he's got his trusty steed, dog, Rocky. Sure, Rocky's napping somewhere on the premises.
Right by me.
You got a dog, Rena? You got any kind of animal?
I got a cat. That's enough.
Okay. All right.
Eddie had a pet snake last week.
I did have a pet snake.
I wish y'all could have seen that snake. No, at his house.
We had seen him when all the flooding was going on, and then I went over to the garbage can, the big garbage can.
Uh-oh.
Rolled to the street. I went to the garbage can, popped it open, threw a can in there. All of a sudden, this big old black water moccasin comes out.
Wow.
Let's just say that...
You got to change your underwear, didn't you?
I've been packing and moving. When you seen that snake, I seen a picture of him. I'd have moved.
It's time to go.
There's more than one there, I'm afraid.
And so I ran over to my car, and I got, I guess I'm kind of admitting I carry a gun in my car. Those of you that are from California or other places, don't listen to that part. Disregard that statement. Anyway, I ran over there, and I got a pistol, but it really is not, it's just like a straight-up pistol, you know. It's not really the right thing. I've got my snake pistol called the Judge, and it's got gun shells. And I ran in the house. It's kind of my bedroom gun, because you can just point it. You don't have to be totally accurate to stop somebody.
Gotcha.
And so I ran in the house. I ran past Martha, and I said, "Huge snake!" And I just ran in the bedroom. I came back out, and she's like, "Ah, ah, ah!" Up underneath the garbage can again. He was basically laying out of the sun.
Oh.
And crawled back up underneath there, so I kind of grabbed it, you know, pushed it for it to go out, and he started going away from me, and I shot him. And then he went over there, and he was dead, but whatever. He was kind of cold up, took a picture of it, and sent it to them guys, and he was about that big around.
Woo!
It was a big snake.
Wow. Half feet, that big around. He was a big snake.
Wow.
And I'm going to tell you something. I was not comfortable the whole night. And I... actually, Pravina, there's only four kind of snakes I really don't care for. Only four.
Rattlesnakes, water moccasins.
Copperheads.
Copperheads and coral?
No. It's probably a little wider list than that. Big ones, little ones, dead ones.
Okay.
That's my list, that's for sure.
All right, let's move on here. People are tired of hearing us cut up, I'm sure.
Okay.
All right.
First off, we've got Kent, and Kent, hope that you figured out your call mute code. So I'm going to go ahead. You unmute.
Whoops.
All right, so Kent, what you need to do is make sure you have headphones in.
Show them earbuds you got, Zarina. Show them earbuds.
You can have these.
You just punch those in the side of your computer, and you will not echo anymore.
Nope.
We are not going to be able to unmute you until you get some sort of headphone in so that we don't have any reverberation or backfeed there. So... I'll go ahead and read through your question. Once you get that done, you can either raise your hand or you can type in any questions back into the board or any follow-up that you have. So I'll just read the question, and then we can go from here. And that, Charles, this is primarily up your alley. So he had an email that was sent in for a foreclosure in Pennsylvania from his attorney. And basically, the email was, best practice would be that you provide me another bring-down title search dating from the most recent one to date. I request the sheriff's sale. The sheriff will require prepayment of fees to schedule the sale, including a fee for the sale itself, service of notice of the sale on defendant, and the opening bid of the sale, which the plaintiff is required to make as a deposit. I would need you to provide me with the funds for those costs before I can request the scheduling of sale. I will discuss these costs and time frames with you in more details in 1 to 2 weeks. So what I'm trying to figure out is, why does the plaintiff have to make a deposit, and how much usually is the deposit when the plaintiff is the one owing the money being foreclosed on? So he's asking if the homeowner owes $34,000 in principal, $7.5 in interest, $1.6 in back taxes, and $5,000 in attorney fees incurred by the plaintiff, and $1,000 in miscellaneous to the plaintiff, why does the plaintiff have to pay more money at the sheriff's sale beyond the established fee set forth by this court for conducting the sale? So I guess he's really trying to figure out is, what is the true process of the foreclosure, and what fees is he going to need to get this ball rolling?
Well, he'll want to confirm the fees with his foreclosing attorney. We had a foreclosure in Pennsylvania recently that I had to put up, I believe it was 10% of my bid amount. Okay, so my bid amount was $70,000, and I had to put up $7,000 as a deposit. And typically, basically, what that does is that goes towards the foreclosure sale. Once that sale is completed, you can get that money back, but typically what happens is it goes towards any type of foreclosure cost, attorney fees for the sale, any type of publications, any of the actual cost for that foreclosure sale. Pennsylvania is one of the few states, actually it's the only state that I recall, that I've had to put up a deposit to complete a foreclosure sale. So, you know, he's got to make a determination what his bid amount's going to be, and again, he probably needs to get some direction from his foreclosure attorney, because, you know, I believe it's going to be a percentage of what his foreclosure bid's going to be at the sale.
You identify up front, Charles, of what you're willing to take the bid to. Is that what you're saying?
Correct. So, I mean, you know, so you got to look at what it's going to be worth to you, okay? So if you go in there and bid $40,000, you know, somebody comes in and bids $41,000, are you happy and you move on? You know, we had a property, had some equity in it that we were foreclosing, so we had a little bit of a higher bid because we were looking at, we needed to get a little more out of it. So we had a little bit of a higher bid, and we had to pay 10% of what our bid amount was. So our UPB was probably about $90,000, and I think our bid was $70,000 is what we took it to sell for.
Robin Jackson just typed in the thing that she had an attorney tell her that, but she called the sheriff's office, and they said she didn't have to do it. Now, the only question is, was that specifically in Pennsylvania?
I don't think it's county specific. I think it's more...
Specific.
I think it's state specific. So, Robin, that's because we did verify with the judge and the sheriff that we had to put up that fee, and they said, yes, you did have to put up that fee. So, anyways, and that, then anything that was left over after the sale, it took... You know, it takes you several weeks to get anything back, but anything that's not absorbed by foreclosure fees or posting fees, as far as publication fees, things like that, it was returned back to us.
It wasn't in Pennsylvania, so that's hers was not in Pennsylvania.
Oh yeah, no, this is in Pennsylvania only. Pennsylvania is the only state where I've had the issue of them coming up saying I had to put up a deposit. And I believe it was 10% of what my bid amount was.
How long before you get it back?
It took me 6-7 weeks, and out of $7,000, I got about 3 of it back, maybe. So.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
This is Ken.
Yes,
so
sir.
You identify what all your fees are, and you establish the deposit amount that the state requires. If you've gone ahead and paid the sheriff for his fees for conducting the sale and everything else, why would you not get the full deposit back?
Well, you should, Ken, if you've already paid those sheriff. Have you paid the sheriff his fees?
Not yet. This is new information.
I think what he's maybe saying here is the attorney is penciling out these other fees.
Uh-huh.
And then he's saying, in addition to, you need to establish an amount for the minimum bid, percentage of the minimum bid. In your case, your 10% of the minimum bid encompassed knowing those fees had to be paid.
Right.
Of the $4,000, those were monies that came out of your, what this attorney has already itemized.
Correct. Yeah. So that was all the attorney fees. That was the sheriff's expenses. That was every expense involved. And this was a lengthy foreclosure that we had the borrowers contested. So we had gone back and forth several times trying to get this foreclosure completed. So
it sounds like to me, Kent, that you may not have to spring for 10% because you're already coming up with these other fees. In other words, they may not require 10%. Right. Maybe too much. Sounds like it would be.
Okay.
And you want to confirm that again, Kent, with the attorney? If you paid any fees, then you need to let the attorney know that up front, and you may not have to come up with that. That the attorney needs to give you, they should be able to outline what percentage you're going to have to pay of your bid amount.
Thank you.
Charles, would it be a good idea for him to contact the county just to see what their procedures are so that he's in line with being able to talk to the attorney also?
Well, he's probably, somebody's working with this attorney. I'm assuming it's Ken or his servicer is working with the attorney. Correct, Kent?
Correct, I am directly.
Okay, so Kent's already working with the attorney. I mean, he can contact the county, but the county's not going to know what the attorney fees are. The county probably wouldn't know what the sheriff's fees are.
All right. Well, that's interesting. It's an education.
Oh, it's yeah.
Every day, Kent, believe me.
You know what my saying is, right, Kent?
No, what's that?
I said my saying is most of this stuff just works out. And, you know, over the years, I'm just telling you it's the case. When we say we're in the workout business, that there's a reason they use that terminology.
Yeah, but what was the name of your gun again?
The judge.
The judge.
it's an excellent snake gun if you ever need one. Just saying, Zarina.
Yeah, we'll have to get Zarina one of those.
What do you think I got a cat for? It gets all the bugs, all the lizards.
That snake was, that cat would
that snake would have eaten that cat.
I'm just saying, for the smaller stuff, I got, you know.
Unless you got a bobcat. Yeah, there's a picture of the judge right there. That's actually, I have a bigger one than that one.
Wow, that's a good-looking gun.
I have a bigger one than that one because mine's a 3-inch Magnum. That's not the 3-inch Magnum right there. So mine's a little bit bigger.
This is hilarious.
We'll take you up there to the ranch in the summertime when the snakes are out, and we'll see how you do without me with that gun.
I should be bringing her own gun, I bet. Should we bring her own gun?
Comment for that.
All right.
A not very politically correct joke for that, but I won't say it. Because we're being recorded.
Stop recording real quick so you can say.
I've already been practicing my political today.
Yeah, we're at our limit right now.
All right, Matt.
All right. All right, you're unmuted. Go ahead.
Hi, guys.
I'm Jill. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. I just want to let you know I'm new to this, so I'm sorry if my questions seem a little premature.
Look, Michelle, Mangan's new at this, too, so you guys don't make a difference.
So I was going over the tape today, and I saw a couple of non-performing loans. And I looked into the foreclosure process. I didn't realize after attending the 3-day that it would go to a sale. I just thought once the foreclosure process was done that I would take possession. So I'd like to know, like, the process. How does that work? And do I have to make a bid? Because they didn't really explain that.
All right, that's a great question.
So every state it has a different foreclosure process. I mean, they're all similar, but there's different processes in different states. Generally, the process as far as the demand process is pretty similar throughout the process. But one of your questions here I see is if you have a foreclosure on a property, what does it mean when they have to advertise the property? So in some states, the attorney has to advertise that this property is scheduled for a foreclosure sale, and they have to. There's a time frame that they have to advertise this, you know, prior to the actual foreclosure sale. So, when you see where they're saying it has, they have to advertise the property. That's why. That's the notice. It's a public notice. Not all states require a public notice, but a lot of states will require that you advertise a foreclosure sale.
So an advertisement doesn't mean it's actually going to go to sale, or it does?
No. Advertising means it's just posted in a local newspaper.
Yeah. Well, it can be a couple of things. Correct me if I'm wrong, Charles. If it is a statutory foreclosure, there's always going to be a public notice, right?
Correct.
Which is if there is a judicial foreclosure, since sometimes they don't require public notice for that.
That's correct.
Okay.
Interesting.
So let me build a couple of cornerstones, and I'll let Charles kind of work off of that. So basically, there's two systems of foreclosure that we see in the United States. Okay, one system is called a statutory foreclosure process, Michelle. And what all that simply means is that an attorney, typically an attorney, it doesn't always have to be an attorney, is called the trustee, okay? So the trustee follows the law, the statutes, and they conduct a foreclosure sale where they don't have to go in front of the judge.
Is that the same as like the non-judicial?
That is the same, exact same thing. They follow the law. As long as they follow the law, they never have to appear before the judge.
Okay.
They do have to follow the law. That's why you typically want an attorney to do this for you, right? Because they have what's called errors and omissions insurance. They do something stupid, then you can go back and win them. If your Uncle Harry messes up, then you can't really do much with him, except give him that judge that I showed, that Matt showed you.
Ooh.
Picture. So, just kidding. Okay, calm down. No hate email on that. So that's a statutory process, and in that case, you're going to see either in the newspaper or in the courthouse, they're going to make a public notice. The second type of foreclosure process is where they use the document called a mortgage. And that is called a judicial foreclosure process. It's a lawsuit. And in that case, you have an attorney. You have to go before the judge. In some cases, it is a sheriff, right?
Correct.
Yes. Or in some cases, it can be a magistrate. Mm-hmm. Is that true in North South Carolina, Charles?
Right.
Or in some cases, it's like a specialized judge, like in Florida,
mm-hmm.
like a mortgage judge. Who does nothing but foreclosures and mortgages. Anyway, Charles, you can kind of expound on that. But in that case, you then are you're having to go to court to get this done. And the language that we use now at a statutory foreclosure, it's an auction. Right. Now, the attorney that stands up there and auctions the property off doesn't sound like Paul O'Dwyer and can do what's called the auctioneer's patter and say, "What am I bid?" You know, that kind of thing, right? So that's different. I mean, but it is an auction. They read off of the deed and they auction it off, and people bid. Okay.
Okay. So, as the owner of the note, do I need to put a bid in to get it?
That's a great question. I'm gonna let Charles kind of backfill some of this. So definitely don't forget that one.
Okay.
The second thing is, so in a statutory foreclosure, there's not a judge involved, and you're gonna need to protect your interest into what somebody pays for it. Okay. So once again, don't forget, because it's a great question to go back and clean up. In a judicial foreclosure situation, it doesn't necessarily go to a third-party bidder, right, Charles?
Correct.
Does it ever go to a third-party bidder?
It can go to a third-party bidder.
All right, so those are two different scenarios, Charles. When we refer to a foreclosure sale, there's a good bit of difference typically between a statutory foreclosure sale and a judicial foreclosure process.
Right, so typically the judicial, like Eddie was saying, a judicial foreclosure sale, or it's actually a lawsuit or a suit, and it goes before the judge. The judge is the one that actually grants the foreclosure. But it can go to a sale. You know, typically if it goes to a sale, you set the minimum bid. So your attorney is going to request your bid on the property. So it's not like they're just going to go out there and put this house up there and somebody come along and say, I'll give you $5,000. It doesn't work like that. You set a minimum bid. You'll set the minimum bid on the property. So that way you know that you're never going to sell. It's never going to sell less than what you owe on the note.
Gotcha. That makes sense.
Okay. But what you have to keep in mind, on occasion, it does happen, people may outbid you. So you're going to want to make sure that if you bid $25,000 and somebody comes in and bids $26,000, you know, you want to give your attorney the starting bid and you want to give them your ending bid.
Okay.
If I lost out
on the bidding process, then they would pay off the note and they would take the property instead of me getting the property.
Well, that's what I was going to say. There's a couple of things about that. You're not required by law to require the full payoff of your loan as your bid. You can take essentially what would be a short at foreclosure. You can require less than your loan amount plus the payoff plus attorney fees, right? But as Charles said, you don't want to short yourself and have your attorney bid you up to $25,000. Somebody like Zarina come in and bid $25,000 and a dollar and outbid you, and all of a sudden you got $28,000 invested in the note, right?
So
here's what I would not do. I would not bid more than my full entitlement, meaning my loan payoff, my attorney fees, my workplace insurance. You can add whatever you've got in the deal. That can be part of your payoff. But don't do it. Don't bid in excess of that, because guess who gets the additional money?
I don't know.
The guy who you foreclosed on.
Anything over the payoff of that loan would go to the borrower.
Okay, that makes sense. Okay.
And as crazy as it sounds, in a heated foreclosure situation, there may be enough money to totally pay off the lender. They may pay off a junior lien if there's one, and there still may be money that goes back to the borrower. And probably right now in like places like California or, you know, Colorado or, you know, wherever, where things are like really hot, that's probably not that uncommon today.
Correct.
Interesting. Okay. My next question was, I was looking at another deal note on today's tape, and there was a tax certificate, and I wasn't sure if that's the same as just paying off unpaid taxes. Am I required to pay that?
Well, the tax cert certificate, typically we pull tax certs to confirm what the taxes, pass-through taxes are, taxes due on a property.
So that doesn't mean like it's owned by the, I know they do tax sales.
Well, typically you want to confirm that with your county. You can look on your title report, but you definitely want to confirm that there have not been any taxes. So typically show a tax.
That ain't me.
Azarina's earbuds. Yeah, so you want to confirm what the taxes are. Typically, if there's a tax deed, you know, there may be a deed that's or taxes that were sold at a tax sale that can be redeemed. So, but you want to confirm that. But the tax certs or certificates are typically their report that shows all the outstanding taxes on the property.
All really a tax certificate means is just a name for a search for taxes.
Okay.
So you could call it a tax search, but the industry term for it is a tax certificate. That's just what the industry calls it. So it's just
that's what they call unpaid taxes. It's called a tax certificate.
That's all it is, just a buzzword.
Okay. Also, if there are any non-tax liens on the property, do they need to be paid prior to me selling to an investor after I obtain the property?
Well,
when do they be paid?
Michelle, once you foreclose on the property, if they're non-tax liens, IRS liens, if they're like judgments, credit cards, anything of that nature, those would be wiped out at the foreclosure. You wouldn't pay those because those will be wiped out at the foreclosure sale.
Okay, and who does that? Is that part of the attorney's job?
You know, once that foreclosure sale goes and that deed, that foreclosure deed is recorded, it clears, it wipes those out.
Oh, okay.
Okay, it supersedes that, but it does not supersede property taxes. Those are tax liens you cannot wipe out. You know, if there's IRS liens, you can generally get those dismissed, but you have to go through a notification process, but you can get those usually dismissed. But any other type of lien, such as a credit card judgment or something, those wipe out automatically at the foreclosure when they record that deed.
Oh, okay, that's interesting. And do you guys know, how do I find information on the cost for foreclosures per state? Like, do they differ? How can I find that information out when I'm trying to figure out what my costs are going to be?
Do we have something on our website, Zarina? I think we have
any foreclosure cost.
Yeah.
Don't we have it, Zarina?
I can't put my hand on it right now. We probably do. I'll check. Let me check in the background.
Okay. Matt, are you familiar with that? I know we had at one time had a breakout, and I can't remember which vendor we had that posted on.
I know we have it broke down on which states do which laws and which type of foreclosure and how long it takes. But as far as the pricing, I did see it one time, and I've been looking for it. I just haven't found it yet.
Madison Management did it, but it also included their fee, I believe.
And Michelle, typically, if you've got your servicer handling your foreclosure, you know you can pretty well get an idea on those states, what a foreclosure is going to cost.
Okay, I was just asking because like when I'm trying to figure out like what I'm going to be all in for this, if it does come to me having to foreclose, I kind of want to have an idea of what that's going to cost me.
And keep in mind, a lot of the assets we manage and that we sell are land contracts, Michelle. So you're not going to a land contract in a lot of states are going to be a simpler process, and it's going to be more affordable because you're really not foreclosing on a land contract. You're going to terminate a land contract. So it's typically similar to an eviction process. So the fee is not going to be as much as it would be for a full foreclosure on a file.
Megan, here's the good news. When we said we were scrambling for this, we got about 14 14 messages on the board that Kevin Shortell has this. So that's the good news is we just need to know where it's at, Zarina, make sure it's posted. But I was pretty sure we did have it. But he's got that list.
Okay, cool.
If you actually go to Madison Management's website, they do have this.
About Madison is that includes their fee. So that's just not just attorney fee. They do have a fee that they charge as a servicer to do it, and that number is in that fee. So not totally an accurate number.
Okay.
But as far as the guidelining, I mean,
what Kevin posted is what Fannie Mae allowable fees are, which is which is kind of industry standard.
Right.
All right. That's cool. Right. Michelle, I hope we helped you.
You did. Thank you so much, guys. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Bye.
Have a good night.
All right, Matthew.
All right. Well, next up, we have a little what's hot on the forum.
All right, Mr. Mangan, I think we are done with our legal issues.
Elvis is leaving the building.
Elvis is leaving the
building. Y'all all have a great afternoon.
I was in a conference call this morning, and Charles was sharing some views on attorneys.
Yep, I always have my views on attorneys. So, anyways, y'all have a great afternoon.
Thanks, bud.
See ya.
Yeah, we were doing some asset management, and the attorney took 6 weeks to tell us that he didn't have all the documents he needed to do an eviction.
Okay.
As I said, we were sharing our views.
Yeah. Allowable.
You know what they call that, Zarina? There's an industry term for that.
What is it?
Attorney time.
Attorney time.
Yeah, that's different than regular time.
Yeah, apparently.
Attorney time is quick if they're looking for you to pay them. It's slow if you're looking for them to do something.
And expensive.
Turns into them paying more to pay them.
Yeah. All right. Lazarina, let's talk about this.
Okay.
So I did a little cleaning up on the document that I had forwarded to you from a student. So I kind of took the personal thing out of it.
Yeah.
And this was something that this doesn't mean that Eddie's listed every possible scenario. That just means we want to go to the forum where it's relative to capital raise and start specifically you guys listing different scenarios that you want to accomplish if you're working with a capital investor. So let me tell you what it is. If I just say call an attorney and start from a blank sheet of paper and go get some kind of a legal document where you can stay out of prison and raise money from investors, the starting number is about $5,000. Probably goes to about $50,000. Depending on what you do, a private equity, PPM, or you just do some kind of a... But the more you're like, I don't know, I'm just kind of figuring it out, and stuff, well, the attorney's going to fire up the meter, and they're going to charge you based on every little thing. So we're working with an attorney named Jillian Sidoti, who is a specialist SEC attorney. I know that Jeff Watson refers to her quite often for SEC issues. And I met with her at an event recently, and we sat down and I said, I need you to create an affordable plug-and-play document, which is probably going to be, I don't know what she's going to charge, but just say it's $500. If it's $650, don't email me. But it's going to be something like that. And what she needs is enough different formats to build in kind of a plug and play so that it doesn't take personal attorney's time to go figure it out.
Right.
So in order to do that, Zarina, the only way she can do it is students need to lay out what they're trying to accomplish. And I tried to initiate some of this conversation.
Right.
And I did this the other day and I just thought it was a good working outline. Zarina, we're using the forum for this, right? This is not, don't email content or help desk or Zarina or Eddie or Bob Repass. This is not the right format. The right format is going to be go to the forum, put your information, be very specific, not pacific, specific.
Yep.
And, and from that, it will enable us to kind of work with some different kind of plug and play, pick the, you know, kind of menu based scenarios. This doesn't mean everybody's story may not require some work that's billable hours with an attorney, but she feels fairly confident if somebody, if you guys will be very extensive in putting this up there, that she'll be able to create a plug and play that's pretty darn close to good enough.
Okay.
So
this would apply to not just JVs with an investor, but maybe a JV with, you know, somebody you're partnering up with or something like that as well, right?
Well, this is specifically dealing with, hey, you like my little saying there?
Yeah.
You know, can't tell you what kind of bait to use till you...
tell them what kind of fish you want.
Tell them what kind of, what we're fishing for.
Mm-hmm.
So this is specifically for people that are going to do work with one investor and do something kind of like a JV. Zarina, there's a little contingency out there right now.
Mm-hmm.
They're not necessarily crooks, but I think they're breaking the law. Okay? And I don't know that sit in front of a judge and a jury that they're going to go, oh, they're sweet people. We're really not going to prosecute them. They're violating SEC violations with the way that they're marketing and positioning this JV thing.
Ah, okay.
And I confirmed this with Jillian, and she said, you are correct. I sent her some examples, and she goes, oh, my God. And she actually knows a couple of these people that are doing it, or she knows specifically a couple of the industry leaders that are facilitating this.
Hmm. Okay.
And so just because you see somebody out in the marketplace doing this, don't think, well, I'm going to do the same thing, man. Because, and so what I said was we need a very specific thing that would address everything from one investor, which would be like a JV, multiple investors, which could be like a limited partnership, or it could even be a LLC.
Okay.
It could be different entities depending on how many investors you have and what you're trying to accomplish. So that's what we're trying to do, and you know, the forum obviously becomes a great way to kind of get people's mind, thinking here, and that's what we're trying to do. So we're really kind of, we're hoping for a lot of activities. Zarina, I do see you have a question up there. Can you put a Word doc up there? They just paste what's on the Word doc onto there in the form. I'm not sure what's the right way to do that.
I don't think I allowed those permissions at this time. So, but you can copy and paste, and it does have rich text editor, so it's just like a Word document. If you copy and paste, it'll keep all your formatting. It should, anyways.
Okay. So that's what we're trying to accomplish here. We are trying to really exploit this. We're using this for partials. We're using this for... like the capital raise piece. We're trying to use the format where people can collectively put stuff, and then we come back and like pull it together and push it together to, you know, find the, to make sure we find the common threads.
Yeah.
Okay. We did mention this last night, Zarina. I'm gonna go over this really quickly, but we are changing some ways that we do content.
Uh-huh.
And the ways that we are going to go about accomplishing that. So let's talk about that, Zarina.
Sure. So actually this week, Matt and I are going to be doing interviews, and what we're going to do is actually get some more people involved with content and the liaison role, sort of merging both of them. And one of the things on your end as the attendee, as the student, that it's going to spill out to is if you have a question and you either can't make the webinar or you're too shy to bring it up on the webinar, what you'll be able to do is contact that liaison and say, hey, here's my issue, here's what I'm looking at, here's what I'm confused about, can you present this on the webinar for me? And you still have to do the same amount of homework, because especially when somebody else is presenting your case study, they need to know almost too much information so that they can get the questions right and kind of get what you need out of it. But that is something that's going to be coming up, so more of you can kind of say, okay, this is what I'm dealing with, I'm not sure how to address it, I'm not even sure how to bring it up. Well, the liaison can go and bring it up on the topic and handle it for you.
Yeah, so we think there's a lot of people that, you know, maybe aren't as interactive with us as they should be. Mm-hmm. And that is because, you know, they're shy. And we get that. You know, as somebody becomes more seasoned with us, they get to know us better and all that stuff. But we don't want to lose some potential in that regard. Now, so that's the easy part, right, Zarina? We're gonna really help somebody, even if they're shy or a little bit timid or whatever. They think, oh my God, this may be a dumb question, and I don't want to go get spotlighted or whatever. And so we're gonna help them in that regard. Here's where we're not gonna be light. Okay. We get students that send us questions all the time. Some of them will send us like 18 documents. They send us a bunch of stuff, and there's like no comments, no like look at this paragraph, do this. Just send us 18 documents and say, I want to put this up on a call. And we're like, yeah? For what?
Right. And
we bought the loan. We already have the due diligence documents, so we're pretty sure about that part. You know, and so what we're going to do is we're going to make them do their homework. We're not punishing you. We're helping you.
Yeah.
It's the drill down. It's the, you know, I'm looking at the deed of trust on page so-and-so, and I see this. And it will, actually, the person then doing the content will, like, highlight it so we can pull it up and see that part.
Mm-hmm.
So we got some really cool ideas. We are going to treat you like you're in college. We're not going to treat you like you're in third grade. So generic questions like, should I buy this note? I don't know. You got a coin?
You know, all right.
So we're doing it to help everybody, and particularly to help you guys. Because let me just tell you something. Me learning due diligence in my early life of doing this, it just like everybody else. I mean, I had to go really spend some time and dig through it. And trust me, if you do, it'll be very helpful. So we're going to be a lot more specific in asking you when you guys want us to cover something specifically. If you're, you know, like we've had students that say, well, I don't know if I think there's an issue on the title. And we're like, okay, where's the title search? Oh, you want the title?
Right.
You know, I mean, so part of that is we're going to be a lot tougher in making you put together something logical and a logical thought process. And we'll help you prepare it, but it'll be very good. All that we're really excited about. We think that this really is a great content builder. There's a lot of things that we're going to tie together with the liaison calls, right, Zarina, and what we put back in the calls. Zarina is lifting herself up. I think that'll be exciting for her to kind of, you know, share the vision on a continual basis of how she's been able to help you guys. And I think all of you that have been deep with us know that's definitely the case. So what else?
That's all I got off the top of my head for now.
One thing I would like to kind of put out there is, whenever you initially are going to be sending something to content, the entire thing needs to be sent in email first, and then we can recontact you back or follow up with an email or a call afterwards. but we do need to understand what you're asking for in writing to a bunch of people. So this email doesn't just go to me. It doesn't just go to Zarina. It goes to everybody on the call who was on the call, Bob, both of the Kevins, Joe, and if we just get an email call and then have to put that back in, we don't truly get the flavor of what you're asking. So put everything in the email first, and then once we have questions, we'll email back or follow up with a phone call. So that's one thing I just wanted to
And we're not – listen, guys, we're not fussing at anybody. I will say that I had one email today. I counted. It's like it threaded back and forth like 14 times. And I'm just going to tell you that you got like a crazy high-paid staff with a ton of experience that all get copied in those emails, and it's it needs to be focused and clear and concise. Yeah. But once again, Zarina, if you were in a master's program at a college somewhere, and the college professor said, okay, Zarina, on Friday you're going to do a case study, and you walked in on Friday morning and go, hey, man, I haven't really done any research, but I just have some general questions. You don't mind, Mr. Professor, me, like, take a class time. You know what I'm saying? Everybody laughs and goes, there's no way you would do that in a highly regarded master program. And so no school is just going to treat you like you're in college.
Yep.
And it's going to be good for everybody. And I don't mean that everybody didn't think otherwise. I just mean that, you know, there's times where when we don't have specifics or we don't have the documents, we're just not able to take this to the level that we should. And that's what everybody wants. Everybody wants to take it to the highest level, right?
Exactly.
We're going to help you do that. We're just going to make you – we're going to be strict about following a format. And as Forrest Gump said, that's all I got to say about that. We're ready to go to open mic, Matt, or we don't
think so.
Yeah, we can. Just wanted to hit on it real quick. This isn't something too in-depth. There is content. The new registrations for content or for the webinars is going to be coming out in the next week. So if you or your partner are not both registered with Note School, and that means both of your accounts are registered, or your spouse, make sure to email info@noteschool.com, email Riley, and let him know who all the contents are so that you can both register for the webinars. With that, are you ready to go to open mic?
Yeah, everybody understands that each member of Note School, that can be Eddie Speed and then Martha Speed, but we're both members, right? If Eddie registers on the content and I pass the code on to Martha, that's not the right thing. So Martha needs to register for the webinars every and it comes out every 2 months. Same thing with me, and there are different registrations for performing and non-performing. Okay? And we do that for security purposes. So it's kind of like the comments we got on the survey about the no food and drink in the American Airlines Center.
Yeah.
I called the president of American Airlines, and dang, he just said that's the rule.
Yeah, can't really fix that.
So anyway, we ask a survey, and we ask you questions, and you gave us answers. That's the only kind of funny one that we consistently got back, is that they really didn't like that, Zarina. Summer Summit got an overwhelming survey result, by the way. So
absolutely. Yeah,
we're
great.
Appreciative, and we do pay attention to it. We do pay attention to things you don't like, so I razz you a little bit, but anyway.
Cool.
That's probably not going to stop either. All right, let's open.
That's part of the entertainment of the show.
All right, Jackie, you had a question about when's the soonest you can contact somebody on a deed in lieu or finding a deed in lieu and other things on foreclosure. So go ahead with your question.
I just have this week purchased a non-performing note from an entity, and they've serviced the note themselves. It's not been by a professional servicer, and before I do anything else, I want to try to give it to an attorney and have them talk to the borrower to try to secure a deed in lieu. And my question is, I have the hello letter ready to go. I have the TILA 404 ready to go with the lawyer so they can sign it and send them all out. But when is the earliest he can call? Is it the date that they we close the non-performing loan, which should be sometime this week, or is it 15 days after the servicing is transferred to him?
Yeah, once you send the letter and notice the borrower with his what's called a goodbye letter, right? Then
yeah.
That's when your 15-day starts on your transfer of servicing.
So right.
The 15-day kind of protection letter that the borrower has is specifically related to when he's notified the servicing has been transferred.
So the answer is 15 days, which would be July 7th or 8th.
15 days from when the borrower has been notified of the transfer of servicing. Has no bearing on when you funded it or when you signed documents. None of that stuff matters.
Okay, thank you. I wanted to be clear on that, on the first one that I did, so that I wouldn't go off in the ditch. Thank you, Eddie.
I was going to ask you a question. You're going to have the attorney try to reach out to the borrower for a deed in lieu?
Correct.
You think that's the best avenue?
Yes, I've studied this quite a bit, and I believe that is the best avenue. She signed one as an agreement when she took the note out, but it's written such it's a poorly written document, and yes, I believe the best opportunity is to get a deed in lieu, and
right. I'm just curious why the attorney you have the attorney doing it
instead of
I don't know. I find a lot of these borrowers don't really communicate well with attorneys.
Okay. I haven't had a good experience with servicers and attorneys, so I'm
I
thought I would strike out once and see what happened. I can always put it with a professional servicer and then have them do it, but I was trying to avoid. I thought when you bought an REO, you avoid servicing, so I was trying to do it a little bit.
I'm not an REO.
I know that. I'm just saying I was trying to do it a little bit up front.
Yeah. You know my concern there, right?
Okay.
Compliance.
Right. I understand. Could you expound some on that?
Do you know all the laws related to COPD?
I don't, but I'm assuming an attorney is
I'll bet you my best pair of Texas cowboy boots, attorney don't know all that stuff.
Okay.
I will tell you this. I know I'm not crazy. I know that students in note school sometimes do things outside of what we recommend. I get that. If they buy a note from us, we are absolutely going to require they board it with a servicer, period. When I was interviewed by the division of the Wall Street Journal called Market Watch, that's one of the very questions they asked me. So, if you're asking me to state my position privately or publicly, I believe if you're buying notes, you should board it with a servicer. Okay? Now, do I think that if it is with a licensed servicer, that you probably could go make a call and see if you can get a deed? Depends on who the servicer is. Do I think that that's ever happened around here? Yeah. But when it's not with a licensed servicer, then you get, this is when you get into some deal where, once again, if the lady's You're saying the lady signed a deed when she signed the documents?
She signed a deed in lieu agreement, and she signed the deed in lieu.
Okay, and when did she sign it?
2 years ago.
When what was her motivation to sign it?
To get the loan, she had to sign it.
Okay, you understand my point? She wasn't really willing to sign it. She was just required to sign it.
Exactly, which is why we've tossed those documents and we're not even using them.
Yeah, I mean, the reason you're tossing the documents is because the guy that originated the loan did a stupid bunch of documents.
That's true. Uh-huh. That's absolutely true. If you read them, they're stupid.
Okay, well, I believe that. I bought a lot of seller financing in my life. Trust me, I believe that. The second thing, though, is don't presume that she's going to be cooperative because she's originally signed those documents. The negotiation ain't even started yet.
Right, exactly.
So I'm saying to you that while she signed those documents, that was an inducement for somebody to make the loan.
Yeah.
She said, oh, can I sign a deed in lieu, by the way? So if I default, somebody could just file the deed in lieu and have to sidestep a foreclosure process?
Hmm.
So the reason I brought that up is because, you know, a lot of times the attorney is not really always the best guy to go build a relationship with the borrower and just say, hey, because see what I'm saying? I mean, like, a guy calls and says, I'm Bob Smith. I'm attorney for Jackie Lambertson, and I just want to make sure that, you see what I'm saying? It's like that people in the borrower's position aren't always like the most, the attorney's not usually the right guy to make that call. He's not a relationship builder.
I understand, Eddie, and I appreciate your comment.
All right, Mike. Matt, let's go to the next one. Thank you, Jackie. Let's see. Trying to read through. Wondering if Notes Direct will be any indication if the note is a land contract. Notes Direct is just it's a good question. It's just a vehicle to put the loans in a real scalable manner.
Yeah.
So there will be land contracts that are listed on Notes Direct as well as notes and mortgages.
So. As far as determining whether they're a land contract, more than likely, just opening up the due diligence files that will be there, you'll be able to see that it's a land contract within that. But like I was telling them, we can double check that there's a special tag saying note mortgage land contract, but I don't think there is one on there. So just to let them know that. And I think that's
I don't know that I know the answer to that. That's
I'll ask Nathan and get a response either by Tuesday or Wednesday. How about that?
Yeah, nice.
I think that's all as far as open life.
Mike says, when does it go live? We are waiting on a servicer. There is a cooperation that we need with servicers that are going to. So we can only list loans on Notes Direct where the servicers have built the thread to download it. So unfortunately, there's a couple of servicers that we have had on preferred servicers list that haven't done that.
Uh-huh.
And the market's going to take care of itself.
That's a nice way of putting that.
So I wish they would do it, but we can't make them do it. But we will say that as the market progresses, then probably need to. You know, you're going to see pretty quickly the servicers that are working with us. So we are waiting on a servicer. They have committed to it, and it's just, I don't know. It's what the servicer sends has to line up with the software that's been created, you know. Let's see, Kenny says, I have an unrecorded agreement for deed, which is the same as a land contract. My servicer's legal department is saying they need an assignment of the agreement of deed to do a forfeiture. Without one, they cannot foreclose.
They have to do a foreclosure.
They have to do a foreclosure. And yes, absolutely, Kenny, you should have an assignment of the land contract. That is a post-closing question. Am I correct in saying that? So the only
That's
thing
correct.
Is if you send it to content, you're just sending it to the wrong folks.
Right.
That's what we're trying to make sure is we answer your question, but that's a post-closing question, and I can absolutely assure you there has been assignment of the land contract done. Good question. Great question. Can you share with us the names of the servicers? I think it'll become relevant to you, Brian. I have a no barbecue policy. Everybody knows that we can't barbecue servicers, but the servicers that are doing what they need to do are going to be, you know, they're going to see the scalability of Notes Direct and what it's going to mean. Because you remember, Zarina, you can, if you're a mentor student, you can take a note that's serviced by the right servicer and put that note in Notes Direct and offer it for sale.
Right.
To our audience.
Correct.
So it's going to be important that the servicers are gonna do it. So I'm waiting on a servicer. I probably will make an official announcement of the two servicers that are done and participating with us at that point. That's probably a fair statement. That way, if they're not on the list, you can make the assumption they're not participating.
Gotcha.
I don't want any hate mail from servicers. I get enough of that. Trust me. Let's see.
Mike's asking if we'll know who the seller is. So as far as students putting notes and stuff on the platform, that's not being rolled out yet, right? That's something.
Well, when you look at Notes Direct and you have access to all the collateral documents, then naturally you're going to know who the seller is.
True. Collateral files, people.
Yeah. It's not likely that mentor students are going to be selling notes to each other. It's more likely that we're going to be selling mentor students' notes to the retail public. It's not likely you're going to sell non-performing loans on Notes Direct. That's probably going to be 99% mentor students. But performing notes where somebody just has a self-directed retirement account, we're going to spend a lot of energy doing that and should really facilitate students being able to sell those kind of loans.
Nice.
That's no replacement for having your own little capital investors, right, Zarina?
No. You guys should have your own list. That's what the playbook is all about, and making sure that you're kind of building up your business that way and in that manner. So,
Zarina.
What's up?
I had this question come up more than I would think.
Okay.
I just want to ask you a question. If you join the Note School Mentor Program and I go out and find notes for you to buy, I buy a big package and I resell you a note.
Yeah.
Do you expect me to have an investor that would buy a partial from you?
It doesn't make sense, because why wouldn't you just sell the note directly to them?
Oh, you mean I already know the card trick. I don't need you if you don't bring anything to the party.
Right.
Okay, I'm just trying to make sure I was thinking correctly.
Okay.
All right. So, yeah, I, I'm asked this surprisingly more than you would think. So I'm just trying to make sure that that would be logical to people. All right, Mr. Matt, thank you. Zarina, I know you guys are working really hard behind the scenes on several things. I know it's a big strain time-wise for you to be on these webinars with us, but I think it's really valuable. And I know you can't always be on with us, but we like having you.
Well, then I'll just keep coming, keep the jokes coming.
By the way, your presentation at Summer Summit, other than the state of the industry, was kind of number two ranked.
Was it really?
I checked
it. All right.
Check the stats.
Very cool. Next to you, that's a compliment. So, yeah, appreciate that.
No, it was really good. Had great survey. We learned a lot from it. You guys have a good day.
See ya.
Bye-bye.